Fans, nice to have you back with us as we welcome Mark A. Simon Says on Twitter, Sports Info Solutions. Mark always has an interesting take on baseball. Mark, how you doing? How you getting along this week?
I'm doing good. And just to clarify, it's I say this in jest, it's Mark Simon. Mark A. Simon Says. I like being called that, though, so you can keep calling me that all you like.
Yeah, that's it. No, it's on the back of your jersey. See, I have this mental picture in my
perfect.
Mind. Of the jersey, and that's what it says on the back. We know generally what your name is, but that's the way we do it in the baseball world. All right. But I'm glad to have you with us, of course. You had an interesting week this week, baseball-wise, and you got to get acquainted a little bit with Kai Correa, who is the bench coach for the San Francisco Giants. Of course, his first year, and a tremendous teacher of the game of baseball. And how did all that come about?
So we have our own podcast at Sports Info Solutions, and I was looking for someone with a coaching background who coaches defensive excellence. And in listening to, among other things, your show, I know that Kai, the bench coach now for the Giants, does that and is very involved in that. And he's also been involved in raising money for coronavirus-related research as part of a project that a number of major league coaches are doing where they're having clinics on Zoom on the internet for high school, college, and youth sports coaches. And I actually sat in on one of those today. And I have to tell you, well, a couple of things. One, he's fascinating. He's 31. He's the youngest bench coach in the country. I mean, you know this. You talk to him. His brain moves at like this rapid speed where he just seems so on top of everything and seems to know exactly what the right solution is to whatever question is being posed of him, whether it's talking about a drill or talking about analytics or any number of things on the baseball side. He comes from this great family of Hawaiian scholastic baseball coaches. And I guess my overall message to Giants fans would be this. If you look at the composition of this coaching staff, this is almost like, I even said it to him, Kevin, it's like you're building a collegiate sports program where you want to put in this plan that is going to be good for you for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. And I think that that's what Farhan is doing. And if you're going to judge it, you can't judge it necessarily on whatever happens this year or next year. You have to judge it holistically in the big picture, with coaches like Kai that are getting opportunities, with Alyssa Newcomb getting opportunities, and Gabe Kapler as manager, and there's stuff with Gabe, but Gabe brings a different approach. It's not a Boch approach, but what they want in the end is something like what Boch had, which was this great system in place that was able to sustain itself for years and years and years, and eventually resulted in three championships.
Well, you can't win without defense. And you know that. You're a defensive specialist in all the things you do. And what impressed me about Kai is his ability to communicate how defense should be played, even at the major league level. Now, his drills can be looked at as things, as you accurately describe, things that are done at the high school level, the college level, and the lower minor league level. And he's trying to do some of these things at the major league level, and that is the challenge. But you explained it very well. It is not a one-year plan. This is not a one-year plan. You're not going to take Evan Longoria and Brandon Crawford and Brandon Belt and whoever else you want to put in the mix and change them dramatically in 1 year with Kai Correa. That's not going to happen. So I can see a change coming, but it's going to take a little bit of time to make that change happen. Looking at some of the drills online, I know he's got the clinics online, which are outstanding.
Yep.
And he had Travis Fryman, I think, today. And he's considered Travis Fryman like his mentor on the professional level for teaching. But I'm going to throw this question at you, and you're right. You analyze this perfectly. It's going to take a while. You can't judge it this year. How will major leaguers relate to this? Because he takes you down to a very basic level of defense.
So as he explained it, and I thought that this was important, he said that what you see on YouTube with the three videos that the Giants put up is a little different from what he's doing for Crawford and Belt and Longoria and Yolmer Sanchez. And that what he's hoping to do for them is give them the tools that will allow them to maximize their primes, or essentially what for these guys is the end of their primes, whether that's better positioning or different things that they can do to prepare for games. But Crawford doesn't necessarily need to be taught introductory drills, but if there are things that he has to do to adjust to his newfound age and skill decline, I think Kai's got answers for that. And I think the thing that he seems like the kind of person that can relate to almost anybody. And I'm very impressed just in talking to him with how he relates to people and watching the clinic and watching some of the videos that I've seen. I think he's going to be a good one.
Yeah, I enjoyed my time with him. And the one interview I had with him this spring is online. It's on my podcast page or loveofthegameproductions.com. And you're right. Interesting. Your take is very good on him and his impact on what it could be this year and being patient with what he's doing, because it's very elementary at the big league level. And that, of course, you know, big leaguers are big leaguers. They don't necessarily want to have their game broken down like that. So we'll see where it goes. Very good. Very good, Mark. That's a good analysis. Let's move forward a little bit. And 1969, for me, the World Series was always an interesting one. The Orioles and the Mets. I had just come back from my basic training for the Army Reserves just as that World Series started. And two of my favorite teams, the Mets and the Orioles, were in it. But Ron Swoboda, and I saw the catches this week. They replayed a lot of the catches that Ron Swoboda made. And fans, if you don't know it, just Google 1969 World Series Ron Swoboda. And my question to you is, you've learned so much about defense over the years, and this goes back to 69. Swoboda saved the series for the New York Mets against the Orioles. Tommy Agee made a couple of great catches, snow cone catches as well. How good was Ron Swoboda? Was it luck? And Tommy Agee, I think, was a heck of a center fielder.
Yeah, Tommy Agee won a gold glove with the Mets a year or two later. See, that's a hard one for me to answer, and I'll try, because obviously I didn't see him. The data indicates, for some of the metrics, that he was an average right fielder. And the play you're referring to was a low-line drive hit to right field by Brooks Robinson in the 1969 World Series. It's one of the most famous catches in the history of the World Series. And it was Tim Burton of The Athletic wrote a story about it and had it as a very low percentage type of catch. I think he was very fortunate, because if he dives and misses it, the ball gets past him and it's probably like a triple. Instead, it winds up being just a sacrifice fly. In answer to your question, I think Ron Swoboda came out as an average outfielder by most of the advanced metrics. He was more of a lumberer. Tommy Agee had some speed and made two phenomenal catches in the 69 World Series. So Ron Swoboda, I would put in the category of average outfielder. He's an interesting character, still very chatty, a broadcaster, I believe, for the minor league team in New Orleans.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, and I figured that'd be right up your alley with all the work you do on the Mets. Another thing that, as a, you know, one thing leads to another with Mark Simon as we talk some baseball with him. Andrew Jones, and a lot of people think Andrew Jones should be a Hall of Famer. Of course, he came up as a 20-year-old with the Braves and really had a tremendous early career with Atlanta. How good was Andrew Jones?
Okay, this one I feel like I can answer a lot better. He was as good as just about anyone I've seen in center field, and my baseball watching goes 40 years now, not quite to your number, but I think 40 years is a pretty good sample size. A couple of things with him. The metrics show you that, at least in the latter part of his career, for which better detailed stuff exists, that his greatness was more reflected in his ability to make the catch on the shallow fly ball than it was on the deep one, that there were some balls that would slip by him over his head at the end of his prime, so to speak. But I don't remember him ever, you can't remember him ever making a bad play. He won 10 gold gloves. I remember at one point I tracked this, that he had played like 170 games against the Mets and never made an error. and seemingly never made a bad play. He wasn't, I can't compare to Willie Mays, but Andrew Jones is as good as you will see in center field. He's not, like, Kim Meyer's a different kind of outfielder than him. Pilar's obviously a different kind of outfielder than Andrew Jones. But Andrew Jones could go and get it wherever it was hit at a very impressive level.
Yeah, I remember the shallow fly ball that he played very, very close. And, of course, as a pitcher, you love it because those balls that drop in lead to big rallies and big innings. So, Hall of Famer in your regard? Was there enough offense there to consider him as a Hall of Famer?
So I do a mock ballot every year. I'll get a real ballot. I think I'm 7 years away from a real ballot. And I had him like 11th. Or 12th on my mock ballot each time that I've done it recently. He's right there, and he's going to need a year where he's got a ways to go in terms of climbing it. Do I think he's worth? Yeah, if I had an unlimited ballot length, I would probably put him in, and I would feel pretty good about it. The guy hit a ton of home runs, and he was as good a fielder as there was in center field at an extraordinarily important position. He had an odd end to his career in terms of performance, and there are certain things like his overall offensive numbers, despite looking really good now, were not necessarily that great when you compare him to other hitters in the time that he played. But I think he's close, right there, right on the bubble.
Oh, good. Very good. Good analysis. That's one to follow. Maybe one more question for you.
Sure.
This was one of the anniversaries of baseball that we love. We concentrate on some of this now because there are no games. But Tom Seaver, 19 strikeouts against the San Diego Padres, 1970, 10 in a row. And he wanted the last one, I'll tell you that, as he has been quoted as saying. How about that game for the great Tom, terrific Tom Seaver?
Yeah, so I couldn't watch this one because the video, I don't think, doesn't exist. But WFAN actually in New York replayed the game on that night, which was really awesome. And you can get the audio tape of it. That's available. So there are a couple of things with that game. One was he did it in 136 pitches, which I thought was pretty good for 19 strikeouts. He seemed to get more efficient. Like ninth inning, he mowed the side down quick. It was probably 12, 13, 14 pitches that he finished them off. It's a great performance. I do want to acknowledge that the Padre team that he did it against won 63 games that year and lost 99. So they weren't necessarily the best of teams. But if you're going to rate pitching performances in the last 50 years, certainly on the raw numbers, 19 strikeout, two hitter would be up there among the best of the best, certainly. And for Tom Seaver, by the way, it was his 60th career win. So I think what's impressive about that is that there was another 251 after that. So pretty good career there. Hall of Fame career.
I remember the game. I want to say it was a day game. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yep.
Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
good.
Right.
Yeah, I remember it was a day game, and I remember seeing that result and just being just, I don't know what got me more, the 19 strikeouts or 10 in a row. But coming after 1969 and knowing how good he was and how great he was and was going to be even greater, it's a good game. It's a good barometer of Tom Seaver's career. Mark, it's always a pleasure to have you on. We've got more things to talk about next week. I was thinking about going first to third, and it's such an important part of baseball. Maybe we could look at that next week, which runners do the best, which managers and staffs do the best of making that happen, and also on the other side of that, who's the best arm to prevent that. So if you want to think about that this week, that's something we can chat about next weekend.
Mark A. Simon says he will do that.
That's your jersey. That's on the back
yes,
of your
like
jersey.
You got know. It.
Mark A. Simon says on Twitter. All right, Mark Simon, thanks so much. Sports Info Solutions. And fans, follow him on Twitter because the stuff that Mark puts out during the week, it really helps you get through the void of no baseball that we're going through now. Mark, have a safe week. I'll talk to you next week.
You got it.
All right. More coming up. KNBR 680-1045, the sports leader.